Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Cal Nez Design, and hosted by Cal Nez himself.
You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation Internet Radio. Your host, Cal Nez. This evening, I have invited a Navajo artist. I'd like to preface this by saying that I am an advocate of Navajo business, whether it is a home cottage or a large corporation, public or privately owned. It does have a lot of potential. Added with people on the Navajo Nation saying, go to school, but come back and work for the tribe, work for IHS, and what have you, rather than the possibility of becoming self-employed to become a Navajo entrepreneur. It's not for everybody, but the idea is that right now we have more employees than we have business owners. We have 350,000 Navajos throughout the world, about 150,000 on the Navajo Nation. While you analyze this whole thing, you look at the Navajo business source list, there are only about no more than maybe 400 businesses. That's tops. The percentage of that is probably about maybe 100 that are 100% Navajo owned. Look at the disparity in how many Navajo businesses are there. I guess that doesn't dictate the fact that their business is not located on the home front, so to speak. But nonetheless, I'm so excited to showcase Navajo business owners, whether they be male or female, that they are in business. And I'm going to continue to do that on this show. And again, my name is Cal Nez. I am also a business owner of 27 years working all over the country. I support Native American or Navajo business owners. So this evening, I have invited a Navajo artist, and her name is Genevieve Hardy, and she is from Fort Defiance, Arizona. The name of her business is Just Weaving, and she has a Facebook page. She has, I believe, a website and email, and we'll give all those contact information as the show progresses here. I welcome you. Yate, could you introduce yourself and your clan and where you're from?
Well, my name is Genevieve Hardy. I'm originally from Fort Defiance, Arizona. Raised here. My clans are Tupahis, which is my mother's, and my father's clan, Hanalahni, who once walks around. Totichini is my grandfather, my Che, who my mother's side. Ashihina is my Nali's, which is my father's grandfather's own clan. So I've been working and doing, I've been weaving for so many years from the age of 14, and recently I decided to start a business, and that's what we're going to be talking about and let you know how I've done this.
Yeah, well, that's very impressive. I appreciate that. So the name of your business is Just Weaving. How'd you come with that name?
That's really funny because a lot of times people call me Weaving. So I said, hey, you know, I'm Just Weaving. And another time in the evening
perfect.
Or the afternoon, I said, Just Weaving.
I love it. That is perfect. See, these are some of the things that captivate the uniqueness of every business. So perfect, Just Weaving. Now, tell us about exactly what it is that your business does.
What I do is set up a weaving loom, which is upward weaving loom, and I set up the warp. I start weaving a dress for a client that wants a dress to be made. So I tailor to that individual. I measure the individual, the bust, the waist, the hips, and, you know, start from there. That's what I do.
And so there's a lot of input into the type of dresses that you make in terms of that you really do have customer care and customer service.
Yes. And I cater to the individual. I ask them so many questions, and when they're going to wear this, how they're going to wear it, and with what kind of jewelry also. So then I tell them this whole piece is going to be 100% wool. So when it's time to clean it, you know, which day you often ask, you know, how do I clean this? I say, oh, you just take it to the dry clean. Oh, okay. So then now they know, okay, you can actually have this dress for a very long time, I tell them. It's not just going to be for you. Maybe when you have children of your own, you're going to pass it on to them. So it's not just something that they just wear right then and there and that's it.
So literally what you're doing is that you're really making some Navajo heirlooms.
Oh, yes. That I really promote because, you know, in the Western society, there's a wedding dress that is done for a young lady. And she chooses her dress, and it's over like $1,000. And the Taylor family will always spend like that amount. So on the roundabout figure of the dresses that I make, it's about that same amount. And I tell people, look, at least my piece of work is 100% wool. It's going to last a long time, and it could be heirloom to someone else, like a grandchild, you know, in the future.
Yeah, and your
so
customer.
That's how I talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and your customership is really just not exclusively Navajo. It could be anybody. If somebody orders a dress or whatever clothing article, and had mentioned that you also take orders for men or boys.
Oh yes, for men, I make them shirts. And actually, how that idea came about was I've actually made a shirt for a woman. It's solid black and red and bold colors, bold designs. I took it down to Phoenix and, you know, for an art show. And here, I was totally surprised. A man bought it, and he really loved it. He says, I like this shirt. I'm going to take it. I'm going to buy it, he says. And that's where my idea is, okay, it's time for me to start making some shirts for men.
Oh,
that's how that idea came.
Well, that's really, really cool. Now, just in closing, one of the things that I want to cover is that entrepreneurship is something that's really not for everybody. You know, if they want to do it, they want to get into business, there's a certain makeup and a certain breed of people that it really does take. And believe me, I've, for the past 27 years, having been in the chamber and dealing with business owners, it is a uniqueness to each and every one of them. So when it comes to Navajo, like in your case, I am just so very impressed that you are doing business, and the fact that you are doing business and you're understanding the dynamics of offering a service and a product where you actually take your product and the service to your customer and tailor it in such a way that you have your own customer base. It sounds to me like it's because of the quality and because of the uniqueness and the beautiful product that you produce, literally done in terms of promotion by word of mouth. That's very impressive. Now, at what point did you realize that, hey, you have something and that you have the ability to become a business owner?
That happened when I was working at the Navajo Nation Museum, and I was just helping set up people with their booths with all the other artists, and that's when it came to me right then. It says, hey, you can do this. These people are just putting out their tables, do this, and set up and keep in contact with the individuals that come by their booth. And I could talk. I could do that. And I totally was amazed at what I could be able to do. And I started to think about it. And next thing you know, I scheduled an appointment with the museum and the auditorium to do a fashion show. So then that took off, and I was totally excited about those kind of things that I wanted to do.
You know, every business owner that I know has their own unique start. You saw it, and you said, okay, I'm going to do a fashion show, and away you go. You've been in business for how long?
Actually, this thing, I think about 4 years now. About 4 years when I actually started putting things together for people, and then I never knew that I could actually, you know, help people with making a dress for them and going on from there, because I think just showing my work through my daughters and my nieces, I think that's where people saw my work, and that's how they start asking about me even more, and they find me, and then it's like, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. one specific design that I want to get into. I am looking on Facebook is a dress that is black and it has some white Navajo motifs down at the bottom. I mean, just the design in that is just so beautiful to me. How did you come up with that?
That one in particular, I always talk about where the design goes straight across, but then again, it's the diagonal designs on part of that is a protection symbol. So as a person goes through life, it goes through the stages, and that's why the design is at an angle, going through the different stages of life, and the protection is with them, and that's what that dress represents.
Wow, that's so. A lot of your design is has a lot of cultural integrity in that. Jone ya ko di khait o a did na customer dish le kroshe she should dress it all le then ni khare she ta hal na do le khait o a or is it through email or how do they do it?
Okay, Shavan, this output all can you guys be beach in Bashko, Ado A Yar, Bashkahane, Yar Nast Ado Nakido, Tepi Ado, Tusado Nakido, Nast A Ado, Ashla Ado, Nas Basado, D Ado, Tank A, Artist Bashna Ado Yar, you had this say Yar, so in Chiang didn't know. weaving@yahoo.com.
Navajo people then he ate on hit na hedlan hit shido le chok di hut o na barla na huin tsne di de an he hit na ko de chna nis bi yes wosn zin do le a do hit o yan ti ke so a ko jo e in na wo ye jo e bin ye ta ko do na ye ki kla na shi ya e ro ta wo al chne ya al so a ro ba ga ho lo do ti chi de tro da hit ku wo shin jo e hut o in na wo ye shi hut o jo whether it is rug weaving or even carpenter work, whatever it is, construction. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is a feature on Navajo business. And again, I'm an advocate of a Navajo business, women or man-owned. I'm very, very honored to have a Navajo business woman here with us this evening. And again, the telephone number for you to call in is area code 347-989-0048.
And again, welcome everybody. I welcome each and every one of you from throughout the internet world. So, this is Cal Nez. And that was a recorded interview that I did with Genevieve Hardy. And you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. And we will open up the telephone lines here in about 15 to 20 minutes. So please have your questions ready. And if you call in, please turn your radios down and because there is a delay. So please know that. And once we get you on air, please state your questions or your comment as quickly as you can because we got lots to cover and I'm really, really have been looking forward to having this show, having this discussion about what I consider to be a very, very important issue because we're talking about Navajo land, Nihikeya, and there are several components. We have a the Navajo Nation in terms of a governmental setup where it sits within three states, New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. And also there are several counties. And also that we are supposed to be a sovereign government. Within that, it's still a trust land. And what does that mean? And how does that work? There's been numerous discussions that I've heard throughout the years that basically has addressed that we have land, we have leases, we have permits, we have all sorts of things that cover the very home site or the actual location where our relatives or where we grow up or where we reside right now. So there's a lot of things to talk about here. And really this show is about getting information clear, that we share information. What is it? How is it going to affect the Navajo people? And here's a discussion that I had on Facebook earlier where I put down, this will affect everybody. Because what I mean by affecting everybody is that we're talking about land. Land is where we live, and we live upon that. Our homes are on there. We drive upon it, and we have certain grazing permits. So, and because of that, and also another thing, too, is that because of these grazing permits, it has a tie. We have everybody in our family that has a grazing permit. Otherwise, how would they go out there? And even a home site lease, that's still a lease. So there's all sorts of things. It does affect everybody, whether you live on the Navajo Nation or off the reservation. I live off the reservation, but I still have relatives down there on the Navajo Nation, over there. I have family, and we have discussion every so often about the home site lease or the, like for instance, like my father has a home site lease that I need to address and all of that, and he's, so anyway, that's what I meant by affecting everybody. Again, the telephone number here is 347-989-0048, and this is Cal Nez, and you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This evening, I have invited, and I'm so grateful for these two guests that have agreed to be here on the show with us, and that, and I'll have them introduce themselves and who they are, clan, where they're from, where they reside, and also specifically what their titles are in terms of what they do for the Navajo Nation. And the first one, first gentleman who has agreed, and I appreciate it, and that is Mr. Mike Halona. Mr. Halona.
Oh, yat eh, Mr. Nez. Shido do, I sent Salawake and sent her Hakon Hidin Nidido, Kwa, Nebna Didness Ninido by Hansen.
Oh, don't then and Linido, do Nanado, Ado and Title Store.
Hakushila, yat eshik eshid Neda, who's out as not faggy. She only two hatch in her yard and her eyes in Asha. I don't quite know how to do it. I don't quite know how to do it. I don't quite know how to do it. But I don't quite know how to do it. 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 Department director said that no, a larger. I said, in law, said that no,
good evening, everyone. My name is Mike Halona. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on this call tonight to be able to share with you what we do on the Navajo Nation with the Navajo Land Department. I'm the department director of the Land Department, and I reside here in Wonder Rock, and I originally from a small community north of Gallup, Tohatchee, New Mexico, and privileged to have this opportunity to be with you this evening.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Halona. And also our other guest, also from the Navajo Nation, is Mr. Leo Watchman. Thank you very much for joining us and for what all the information that you're going to share with us. Mr. Watchman.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Good evening. Can you hear me? Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Leo Watchman, which is by Navajo, New Mexico. And I want to apologize, and I'm glad Mike Colon is on, and he's a colleague of mine. I work for the Department of Agriculture as a department director, and want to extend my appreciation for your invite to participate this evening. I mentioned earlier that I'm glad that Mike's on because I'm one of those Navajos that have a lot of heart for Navajo but don't speak Navajo fluently. So I'm going to defer to Mike as my interpreter if that's okay in your show.
No, that's all right. That's perfect. Well, that's good. So, yes, let's get to the topic. Okay, thanks for the introduction. And all you listeners out there, we'll open the telephone line about 15 minutes from now. And so please have your questions ready and ready to go. Telephone number here is 347-989. We have from the Navajo Nation is Mr. Mike Colonna and Mr. Leo Watchman. The main topic this evening is about the Navajo Nation, land, Keya. And I've been hearing many, many different things from starting last summer, and it started with the Navajo Nation holding a land summit over in Twin Arrows. I'm sure there are certain topics and discussions that were very important that were shared over there. I just saw segments and pieces of it on Facebook. And also since that time, I've heard the word Range and Grazing Act. And just recently, I've heard the Navajo Nation Range Improvement Act. So I just want to make sure that everybody out there is understanding the Navajo people, where what does that department does and what does this act and legislation, whatever it is that we're doing, that we're very, very clear that the Navajo people So Mr. Halona, I would like to have you take the first opportunity to be able to address what specifically that your department is doing for the Navajo Nation, or in terms of grazing, or I'll give the time to you, whatever you the titles are called. Mr. Halona.
Okay, well, Mr. Nez, you mentioned that the Navajo Land Department hosted a Navajo Land Summit in December and at Twin Arrows, and we spent 2 days, and it was just topics on land. And on Navajo land is cherished. It is something that you really can't put into words what it means to someone. It's a feeling, really, you know, and it's one of the hardest things to deal with when you have emotional ties to something. And as I always mentioned, you know, it takes a four-letter word to start a fight on Navajo, and it's land, L-A-N-D. And so what we wanted to do at this summit is to convey to the people. One was to do an overview on the history of the Navajo Nation and how it came to be a nation. And then we wanted to take that and establish that. And so people would understand the basis of that. And a lot of people think that the Treaty of 1868 was what established the whole Navajo Nation, and it's not. It's just a small portion that was divided equally between New Mexico and Arizona from the Four Corners down to right above Gallup and right above Window Rock, actually, right in there in between. That's the treaty land. That's what we have in the treaty. The rest of it came in after that, year after year, small segments came into being by executive orders. Different portions were brought in executive orders, one after another, and in fact, during those times, there were some areas that were taken back out also by executive orders. By stroke of a pen, it became Navajo Nation held in trust land and Navajo Nation by executive order, and then it would be taken out, and then some would be brought in, some were never replaced, and so we took that step by step. Every act that was every executive order, we went by the years, what exactly which partial that was. Some was in New Mexico, and then it'd be Arizona, some up in the Utah area, and all the way up to the present is what we took the people through. And it's a very interesting segment to see how each of it happened. And the expansion is something that Mr. Watchman, my colleague here, is going to kind of touch on from the grazing aspects. And each of those executive orders that came to because there were Navajo families that were using the lands. And so as a result of that, they were able to expand and that we, to show that there was that there are Navajos residing there. They're using the lands. And so the expansion kept happening. And then some of it was reduced, as I mentioned. And so in all of that, the very first land conveyance of any type was a grazing permit. It was a document that started in the early 1940s, was a grazing permit issued because they needed a way to be able to manage all of the Navajo Nation. The government says we need to manage all of these lands. And because of the stock reduction that happened at that time, because of the range, the inventory, the carrying capacity, they could see overgrazing already happening at those stages then. And so, you know, they had to develop a systematic process, and that's how the government established the 26 grazing districts and that make up the whole Navajo Nation. Within those grazing districts, now there's 110 chapters and so forth. And so those grazing districts are now have been put into place. And so when you take a look at the whole nation, and then we started adding lands, we've been purchasing fee lands. We've got almost 1 million acres in fee simple land that the Navajo Nation holds title and deed to. Now the rest of the nation, the rest of the 14 to million acres, almost 15 million acres held in trust, that title and that deed is held by the U.S. government. And so when the U.S. government holds a title and deed in the lands that were set aside for Navajo tribe use, they said, well, we're going to have the Department of Interior oversee that on behalf of the U.S. government. So the U.S. Department of Interior said, we're going to develop a department called the Bureau of Indian Affairs, who will then be the trustee for the Department of Interior to ensure that all these things happen on these lands. They oversee it, and so they became federal Indian lands. And so when you add the word federal lands, you put it almost in the same category as Yellowstone National Park, National Monument, National Forest, all of that. And so that's what makes it very hard to develop and do a lot of things on Navajo, is because you have to ask the person that has been identified as the trustee by the U.S. government, is it okay if we use this land? Will you grant it to us? The Navajo Nation then does the consent, and so does the grazing permittee do the consent. And so we have this huge layer of confusion at sometimes as to the order of how the lands were established and what it means and how it all works now. But that's the foundation. That's why any development that happens on Navajo, There's always a grazing permittee that has an interest, and that interest must be addressed. And so you go to them for consent. But the confusion has always been that the grazing permittee have always been told that, you know, this permit is for this acres of land, and but it's not a land permit. It's actually a authorization to graze a certain number of livestock in a specific area. And so it's a vegetation.
Mr. Halona.
Yeah,
Mr. Halona, so while you're talking about this segment right here, it really, I guess it comes down to, it also, how does it apply in terms of trust land, federal land, and being a sovereign nation? How do those words interact with each other?
Well, trust land is held in trust for the Navajo, for the Navajo people, and so what you have is different segments of Navajo Nation is approximately 14 million acres of Navajo Nation trust land, almost a million acres in fee lands. The nation also leased lands from the states of New Mexico, Arizona. We also lease BLM lands from public lands in New Mexico from BLM. We also lease grazing land from the U.S. Forest Service in Arizona. And then, of course, there's government and school tract lands, about 91,000, and then the new lands that was established for relocatees, 340. That's how you get to 17 million acres. And so when you take a look at what we have, all of it is held in trust for Navajo, except the fee lands. And so anytime we do any development of any type, we must follow the federal statute, the federal laws that are in place to protect whether it's antiquities, cultural resources, environmental, and biological, environmental assessments and things that have to be done to comply with all the federal laws that need for any development. And then in it, we have all of our tribal laws as being a sovereign nation to govern ourselves, to enact and legislate laws, okay, and which we've done. And so we say we have all of these Navajo Nation laws, whether it's from the grazing aspects to the chapter use stuff, to whether it's the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, the Solid Waste Act. All these have also been established by the Navajo Nation itself. So you have Navajo Nation laws and federal laws that you must comply with. And so, you know, it's all federal lands held in trust for Navajo use. But we must get the consent from the Bureau, and that's what prolongs the process. Every development, and if you'd like, you know, we could go through that process of how long it takes, and you hear many stories of how home sites have taken years, and a business site lease takes a long time, and why can't we start businesses today like you can do off the nation, you know, all of these issues that come up. And so when we talk about that, it's really getting communities to do their planning in their areas, to designate areas, to zone those areas and get those cleared. And so they can sublease those out because someone's got to control it by a lease. And so, you know, in everything we do, there's a lease attached to it, there's a permit attached to it, or there's a right-of-way attached to the development on trust lands.
Yeah, that sounds we'll get more into that. And so while we have Mr. Leo Watchman, what specifically is your department, what you guys have been working on? What is this Range and Grazing Act or the Navajo Range Improvement from your Department of Agriculture, and how does this tie in to what Mr. Halona's department is doing?
Well, I want to express my the ability that the colleague has placed out there where housing have developed over the years. I work for the Department of Agriculture, and in terms of alignment. We have three programs. One is the veterinarian program, also the ranch program that leases, and also a grazing management office. The grazing management office has been working for about a year and a half on a document that is looking at establishing a grazing act for Navajo. Mr. Halona mentioned, going back in the 30s, it's referred to as the Taylor Grazing Act, is what the federal government passed, approved for the West, in the Indian country. So it was also other lands up in the I guess the higher upper states and the lower states in the West, I guess you could say. Navajo fell into that, and again, some history says that, or the history that we have lived in the 40s was the first permit issued, and where the Navajo Nation government also accepted a grazing law, a federal law. And that's where the challenges have begun. And when it comes to dealing with, as Mr. Lona mentioned, the various land status, essentially back in the 50s, there was two components put together. One was the establishment of grazing law, and also the establishment of the creation of grazing officials. So with that, as the caretaker or the go-between between the tribal government and the federal government, meaning the Bureau, is that a grazing officer was given the responsibility of monitoring and being the in-between person on transferring of permits, managing permits for Navajo and also with the Bureau. So I'm explaining that because today a lot of people, when we're moving with our document that we're trying to push forward for legislation, is essentially trying to create our own Navajo law involving some of the things that Mr. Loma mentioned that we deal with every day, that a lot of our Navajo people feel the permit is a deed, which is clearly a permit when it comes to grazing. And that's where a lot of problems begin, also end. In the efforts to try to develop a grazing law for Navajo, essentially back in the 50s, I know the Navajo Nation Council adopted federal law, but there was probably very little input by Navajo people in terms of the development. So 60 years later, the window is still open. Since at that time, when these laws were developed, it basically, their statements within the law, it says, until which time Navajo Nation or tribe, basically a tribe or pueblo, develops their own grazing laws, these will apply. So 60 years later, we're trying to push a Navajo Grazing Act following the wishes of the people when it comes to 013 or 014. Going back a year and a half ago, there was issues regarding, grazing when it comes to what are we doing different and what can we do into the future. And there's some statistics that come forward, but one of the interesting statistics is there's 11,000 grazing permits out there on Navajo that's been issued. And there's only about according to the statistics, there's only about 3,000 are active. If you do another equation, essentially, if you look at the population of Navajo, 4% of Navajo people control the Navajo Nation of the 200-plus or 300,000 people we have enrolled. That's startling because, essentially, as Mike has indicated, Mr. Lone has indicated that anytime you start to do something and there is always a process, and sometimes the process, you never can gain consent, and there are delays or some things never are done. So the challenges we have with the grazing act, that's just one portion of that. It's really trying to look at the opportunity that's been given by the federal government in terms of developing our own Navajo law, where we have our own Navajo test system involved. And when I say that, fundamental law utilized in the development of the Grazing Act. But again, there's a lot of misinformation about there, what the department is trying to do. essentially we're trying to gain autonomy on issuing our own grazing permits, thus having the decision-making of how to manage that and efforts of managing grazing more suitable for our people versus in the 50s when these laws were created. It was basically created by non-Navajos. And so there's a big challenge in reference. How do you explain that to people that feel that their grazing permit is like a cultural right? But it really isn't, because it really is it's a permit with a privilege, and a lot of times and it's misconstrued as ownership. And I come from a family which, being brought up, it was explained that, you know, we own the land, and it's our land. And unfortunately, the gap of where the Bureau has been educating even our leadership over the years on Navajo, it never was really clarified. What does that really mean as we move forward, and what does it mean for our younger people in the future? Are we can continue to say it's ownership when it's provided a lot of disputing, also no development? So the Grazing Act is trying to give clarification, and it's a broad approach, but essentially it has drawn some controversy, but also it has drawn some support. And it's a lengthy document to get involved with, but we've been working on it for a year and a half, and I hopefully the callers will be specific on some of the questions, if any. However, we do, we are providing workshops, and we have been in probably about 40 different chapters in the past three months and going over this particular document, which is in draft. And essentially what we're asking out of this document is dealing with drought conditions and a management practice for grazing land. So hopefully that gives a explanation. And again, thank you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Mr. Watchman. Now, for those that are just joining us, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. We will open the telephone line in about a few minutes here. We have guests from the Navajo Nation Land Department and also from the Department of Agriculture, Mr. Mike Colonna from Land Department and Mr. Leo Watchman. And these are some of there's several different issues as I'm listening to both of your presentation. For those that do not know exactly what the grazing permit means, the grazing permit is not really the difference. It's almost a quasi version of a land ownership, but there's a lot of overlaps. And so there is a grazing permit, and there's also a home site lease, or one individual could hold both permits. And so that's kind of how that we're set up. But these grazing permit areas are pretty much overlapping, so there's really no boundaries, no fences, no nothing. So that's really how it's set up. Am I correct on that, gentlemen?
Yes, Mr. Nez, you're absolutely correct. And that's what causes so much confusion. It's, you know, you and I were both raised with the same community, pretty much the same mountain range. And, you know, my grandfather told me that the whole Chaska Mountain was mine, and it still is. But when you pull out a grazing permit, you don't have any legal description to verify what is yours. And back in the day, 1940s, 50s, 60s, so we had these boundaries that were mutual, respected boundaries on family, because you didn't want to get the herd mixed up or anything, and you heard it certain different ways at certain times of the week. Then the mineral licks was a different way, a different day. And so there was they were herding. We just didn't let them out and hope they come home in the evening. You know, things have really drastically changed. And so these grazing situation permit and then a lease. A home site lease is very clear. You get 1 acre, you have a legal description exactly where the leaps and bounds are. It's also a leasehold interest. You can actually use it as collateral for mortgaging. And that's kind of where the lease in 1953, home site leases, became to be was they, you know, people wanted to more of a possessory right, and they needed something instead of to say, hey, this is ours, and the disputes that have start developing, so there's more documentation, more of the real estate type things started happening where surveying started happening, the mapping started happening. And so, you know, at this summit, that was some of the stuff that we were tackling was overviewing land use. How do we start using our land right now? We have 17 million acres, but if you look at all the improvements on it, all the roads that have rights of ways on it, all the utilities, all the water lines that you are leased out now, technically, you know, they belong to utility companies. They've been given that right of way. And then you start looking at all the other roads that go to every resident, 80,000 home site leases, all the government and tracts that have been taken out. Now you take out all the washes and arroyos, floodplain areas that you can't build in now by environmental laws. And then you start looking at all the Ditabakoto, Tishta has Angota, Tuchedan Naho, Arotana Aho Tistana Aho, where you can't develop because of the rock croppings and mesas. And you know, when you pull all that together and you put it on the map, it is very surprising to see what really is left and how much we really don't have left. And then you look at the grazing. That's why you have the overlapping that continues to happen, is because we're people developing. We have over 300,000 Navajos. In another 50 years, we're going to have 1 million. Okay, when you look at all of these impacts, and we're not planning for the future, I mean, 1 million Navajos, are we planning everything out correctly to make sure we're using our lands wisely, the infrastructure being put in wisely, and people say, I want to put my home way over there. They get a lease. There's five roads to every home. And then the utilities, $16,000 to get utilities to that home, and they're 2 miles from the road. If that continues to happen, you know, we're going to be the same situation as the U.S. government is. We're going to be bankrupt. Well, you know, what are we going to do? A koho ebeni na land use planning don't tapidi na in the home site leases don't tasik, and we redid the home site leasing regulations, and those will be coming out soon for approval. We redid the most important is the general leasing regulations that the council just passed in October. That is going to take away the responsibility from BIAA yabahas ani ya in hikuja the nebik. Washington, so that's in D.C. right now. Any day, we're waiting for the Secretary of Interior to give the Navajo Nation the authority to approve all leases, all permits on Navajo, and that's going to change everything. And then on top of that, we've developed our own Navajo Nation title plant, our own record plant, where we can record everything, where we can issue title reports immediately to someone that wants to mortgage a home. Instead of taking that long process, we should be able to give him a title report, get it to his financing company so they can loan him the money to build him a home, and we can record it. And we can record that transaction, eventually go into the Uniform Commercial Code listing so they can record that transaction, and we got it recorded for them. And so those are some of the topics that we talked about, but that land use planning is so critical. Sahonda cemeteries, and other chapters are not allowing people to bury loved ones in the cemetery because they don't vote in that chapter. How crazy is that? the Nedani, and so these are some of the things that we see as a big issue, the land disputes that keep happening because people just aren't clear on exactly what it is. And I know it's devastating to some people to realize that all this time what they've been told is not actually correct, that, yes, they have a grazing
land. Exactly.
Very clear.
Exactly, and those are some of the things. Yeah, those are some of the things that are very, very critical to this discussion, and that is that, of course, there's all these details, and there's so many different departments and so many different layers of jurisdictions and approvals and who has land and so forth and so forth. But really, if I can just put it right down to its basic point, the basic point is that we have the Navajo Nation. We have land. And the way that we're addressing this is because it's trust land that we're able to manage the land through what's called a grazing permit or home site lease. And so that worked just fine. And this is probably a question to Mr. Watchman. And the evolution of our Navajo Nation has been is that the here and now today, the Navajo Nation is coming literally at the crossroads of realizing that, hey, you know what, this has worked just fine. However, we have another dimension of this, and that is that what Mr. Halona has said, and that is that it's development, whether it's development on a governmental level or a personal level, but there is development of some sort that needs to happen. And so that from what I'm hearing, what I'm understanding is that this development is really doesn't have a direct correlation like you do here off the Navajo Nation, where you can go down and say, I want to purchase that land, and it's absolutely surveyed, and it's about this size, and you know the dimension where it's at and located, where you really can't do that on the Navajo Nation. So really, the essence of all of what both of you and your departments are doing is that because of this new thing, the best way I can put it, and that's development, is that's what's causing these discussions and acts and so forth and so forth. Mr. Watchman.
Well, I must have some express some clarification. And when I was saying about assumptions or misunderstandings in terms of the permitting, to go off of what Mr. Halona mentioned regarding history and the congressional actions and also executive orders that took place. Essentially, all of those documents, the main reason that Congress or President continue to give land or designate land for Navajo is due to agriculture. And it's not enough really to do to culture, but agriculture. And again, that's where the grazing permit came in. If I could sort of state the Grazing Act, when we did public meetings, and I know we didn't reach every corner of Navajo, but at some point when you're doing, you've been through about 20 meetings and it's the repetitive questions come up, what the department, through our guidance or oversight, we were trying to address six things that were constant within this act. One was the conversion of a grazing official to a full-time employee. The main reason is for service back to the people and also for adequate compensation. The second thing that the Grazing Act is trying to do is possibly impose a grazing fee. And that is controversial, but is this something that was looked at as from the audience stating or the people saying, we're willing to pay a fee. And there are parts of Navajo that do pay a fee, which is an eastern Navajo with a different land. It's not trust land. I mean, it's a fee land. So the third thing that we're looking at is probate. Probate, and to have some correction on the permit. We have some of those 10,000 permits or 11,000 permits, 7,000 probably need to be probated to become active again. But that probating, either the court system or backlogged, or it's hardship or financial issues, the reason for them not moving forward. We're proposing an act to do away with the probating that brings up the permit. Right now, the permit is being assumed, and there has been case law that says it has a personal interest or has property value, but it's a permit. Maybe the livestock are property and should be probated, but not the permit. The permit is it should not be a part. It should be reissued to a new available permittee. When we talk about young people, that's what they're asking. How can I obtain a permit? And I have to go to probate, and the probate will go back to fundamental law. And at times, you basically you're a generation away, you're out of luck on even obtaining a permit if it's available. The fourth thing that we're looking at is range management units. And I think Mr. Lona mentioned that, again, you're saying that, you know, it's not qualified and conveyed and so forth on what maybe grandma or grandpa or our forefathers had said it's for youth. There was a lot of respect back in the days where people and families knew who was grazing and what areas, and they did a better bad management. Today, again, what I know that's it's maybe the Western way to fence, but there are conflicts, and fencing is one of the answers. If we're able to get people to coexist in terms of their ambition to raise livestock and run in common is the word utilized, then we might have some direction, a better direction given. But there are a lot of disputing, and most people today, and I bring this up, everyone wants to take people to court, and so we kind of lose our culture in that aspect. The third or the fourth thing is development of a brand office to be able to house, and that's going back to the communities. The last thing is majority rules. Majority rules are part of the Grazing Act. It kind of goes into try to help development or help with a decision, saying if it's been identified there are four grazing permits within the area and three agree on the development or doing something, that fourth one would not hamper that development. And that's something that we've been asked to look at and evaluate and bring before the council because, again, some of the economic development initiatives are stopped because, say, one permittee is holding out and does not want to consent. For whatever reason, some of the things it's referred to as landlocking. We look into landlocking and seeing how we can still utilize the Navajo culture and discussions to how can we best use or best manage land. The clarification I wanted to make again earlier was that the grazing land is a specific designation, and the Act is only dealing with grazing. But there are so many issues regarding grazing that's not related, but it happens on grazed land that maybe has a different designation, like home site. That's land that's taken out of grazing and designated for home site or business site. But you may know that, well, we have people that raise livestock or own livestock in these home sites. And, you know, those are probably the questions that come up. And a lot of it is non-permitted livestock owners. So there's a lot of things that we're trying to deal with under the Act, but those are the six things that were real common that are oversight and asked us to address to try to move forward. It does need a lot of input, but we've been asked to bring this before the council in the spring session, and that's coming around the corner.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you shared that. I'm sure that we have a lot more questions, and we are at the top of the hour, and for all you callers, we will open the telephone lines after this break, and you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. We have Mr. Mike Halona from Land Department of the Navajo Nation and Leo Watchman from the Department of Agriculture, also from the Navajo Nation. I want to thank them for being here with us. And these are some absolutely critical issues that we're talking about. And so I'm sure that it affects somebody somewhere on the Navajo Nation, whether they live there or not. And we will be right back.
You're listening to Navajo Digital Radio, politics on the Navajo Nation. The radio show that's raising standards of Navajo intellect. A real paradigm shift. No double talk, no fool. Navajo Graphic Design and Advertising Agency, Calnez Design.
Election season, and we already are hearing rumors being discussed on Facebook pages and through Twitter accounts that one of the candidates for tribal president is conducting an illegal campaign. These kind of rumors are common in every campaign season. As election season progresses, the rumors are bound to increase as the supporters of one candidate tries to smear the campaign of another. In this case, rumors center around former tribal president Joe Shirley Jr. and his role as a member of the Apache County Board of Supervisors. The rumors started after a small announcement in the Navajo Times reported that a country western band fundraiser would be held on county property. A number of people on Facebook said that this would be a fundraiser for Shirley, which, if true, would indicate that Shirley was using his position in the county government to promote his campaign. Pat Sandoval, Shirley's chief of staff, said these reports were not true and that he and Shirley had laid down the law to staff members several weeks ago that they would not tolerate any campaigning on county time, nor would they allow county property to be used in any way to promote Shirley's campaign. Any staff member who wanted to work on Shirley's campaign would have to do it after work hours or on weekends. Sandoval pointed out that he had two cell phones, one for county business and a personal one he used for campaigning. Sandoval said Shirley is planning a fundraiser, but it will be held in Window Rock. His official announcement, which will come in April, will be held in Chinle, but not on county property. Sandoval also stated that it was only a matter of time before rumors of this type began being circulated on Facebook. In other election news, plans are underway by other candidates to make their official announcements in the next few days. Donald Benally, who came in third in the primary 4 years ago, will make his official announcement on Friday. His campaign staff said he would do it right after he pays his $1,500 filing fee in Window Rock. The announcement will be at 1:30 p.m. at the Quality Inn in Window Rock. Chris Deschini, an attorney from Page who ran unsuccessfully for Arizona's Secretary of State in 2010, plans to make his announcement at the Western Agency Council meeting in Delcon on Saturday. This is Bill Donovan with a news flash from the Navajo Reservation.
Thank you.
Mr. Bill Donovan. I want to thank Mr. Donovan for his weekly commentary here on Politics on the Navajo Nation Radio. I again welcome you. The telephone number here is 347-989-0048. This evening's guest, we have Mr. Mike Colonna from Navajo Land Department, and also Mr. Leo Watchman from the Department of Agriculture. And I thank these gentlemen for joining us, covering and sharing with us some of the very complex sets of issues concerning our land, the Navajo Nation. And so one of the things that I just want to clarify is this, is that no matter... Excuse me, if you're addressing it from the grazing or a trustee or a lease issue, fee lands, whatever it is, really it's coming down to how are we as the Navajo Nation, are we going to proceed from this point forward with development coming on to the Navajo Nation? Are these some of the, is that the factor behind this, Mr. Colonna?
Mr. Nez, great question, and you know, I think it's time that the nation put together a 50-year plan rather than a 2-4-year plan. We need a 50-year plan as to, and just based upon the land use situations that we have and what's available still for us to develop on, and to ensure our grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren will have a future, and it is up to us right now. Today is a critical day to ensure that we put the platform in place, that we build the foundation for them, and to get it prepared so, you know, they don't have to deal with all the different discrepancies and the many of the records that have discrepancies that the government has been holding, that causes a lot of animosity amongst families when you're trying to get things clarified, and these records are not there, those are not there, this is this, it's like this, and somebody carrying around a Xerox map that's been Xerox so many times, you don't know if it's been altered or not. You know, there's just so many different things that we deal with, and it's unfortunate that many of these land disputes that that we deal with on a daily basis is not from the outside. It's not someone from a different chapter, a different district. It's within families. It's brothers and sisters and sisters and fathers and you know, it's in the family. And animosity, this bills, and that's why Mr. Watchman mentioned the litigation that is starting to happen. This, the next generation only know one way to deal with things, and it's litigation. And so you're going to see more of it. And so we got to make sure that we put all of our plans, all of our documents, all of our records in a secure format that's automated, that people have access to. And that's never been available, and that's why this Lamb Summit was one of the great things, is to convey this information. And for those of you that like this Lamb Summit, you want to see what the manual looked like, you can go to the nepekeya.org. That's the Land Department website, okay? And you can, there's the whole manual that we gave out at that summit is online. You can pull it off and you can see everything that I'm talking about, all the presentations from the history of the Navajo Nation, how it developed and grew. Every aspect is in there. The land use aspects, the new home site leasing, the new CADEX is another one. Yes, development is happening at a rapid pace. And the new housing study that happened, where the nation needs about 38,000 homes to meet the demand right now. So the development is here, it's now, it's real, and every day I have young couples coming in and saying, where can I buy some land that I can build a home on? Where are there some homes available to buy? Is there any homes for sale here? I mean, they're used to living off the nation, and they're ready. They went to school there. They got their training, they have the experience, they work with different companies and organizations, and they want to bring their expertise home, and they realize they want to bring their children home, and they're like, where do I put them? And then some do go home, and So they come looking, and so those are the things that this land use planning for every community must happen. We have to identify where the home sites, where all the residential tracts are going to go, where all the business zones can be developed, where all the governmental tracts, the new senior center, where the daycare center, where the next chapter needs to grow, where it's going to grow into, all of these, the cemeteries and all of this needs to happen. Where are we planning where our cultural sites are, our recreational areas? We got to develop all those, zone those out, and get them identified and leased, get them cleared. And so when another business wants to come in, a business owner wants to come in right in his community, he can say, I want to start a business. And we don't say, well, you got to go from here and you got to jump through all these hoops, and maybe in 5 years you'll have a chance. No, we should be able to say right there, we have this lot, this lot, this lot open. Which one do you want? Okay, it's already cleared. Here's what it's going to cost, as you do anywhere else in America. There's a cost situated. You'll be up and running and know this because it's already done. That's what we want to prepare everybody and save a lot of the grazing area that Mr. Watchman is talking about. If we just continue to let everybody out anywhere, we're going to destroy our own lands, and which we have been doing with the roads everywhere, and creating more washes with more people living in different areas. And so if we can organize all of that development for the future, so our kids will have a great foundation for them. And so how do we do that? Well, we need to come up with the way we are going to govern ourselves with the general leasing regulations and say, we want the authority to approve home site leases, religious sites, schools, renewable energy like wind, like solar, agricultural, grazing. We want the Secretary of Interior to give the Navajo Nation the authority to approve all of them, and BIA's out of the way, because we need to take control of our destiny. We have the capacity and capabilities to do that. The government of today has never done a good job, never has, never will. And I always challenge people, ask the government, show us your strategic plan. What have you got planned for us, for the tribe? What do you got planned for Indian country? They don't have one. There is no plan. We have to take control now for the future, for our future, and for our great-great-grandchildren's future. And that's what really is happening, Mr. Nez, is it's time that we take control, and we need to change the status of the land. We can't let the government hold it and hold the title and deed for us. We have the capacity and capabilities.
Yeah, well, those are some very, so all of this planning is really about strategic plan, strategically, how are we going to
look into the future so that the younger generations who are very much interested in moving back, and if they want to get into business, they're able to, you know, to accomplish their goals. Right now, no matter what, you know, like you just brought up, you know, the fact that the Navajo Nation, whether it needs housing, I mean, heaven forbid, I mean, it needs housing. And right now, if they want to build anywhere, it really comes down to the approval of the grazing permit holder. So, it sounds to me like that, you know, the avenue or the road is at least that we're moving forward trying to address that. So, now, Mr. Watchman, one of the things that I wanted to also bring up while we're talking about business and development or progress is that, so how specifically is this, let's see, Grazing Permit Act or the Grazing Range Improvement, how is that going to address this land ownership or the opportunity that will give to the people who are now wanting to come back to the Navajo Nation, I want to buy a home? How is this act addressing that, Mr. Watchman?
Well, the act is trying to qualify the permitting process, and we're trying to get the Interior to allow the Navajo Nation to issue its own permit. As I was mentioning, we're dealing with the grazing site, and once grazing is redesignated to for other use, home site or business, we're trying to streamline that for that purpose or that wish. Mr. Alola mentioned, and more of the incentives is on what he is offering in terms of the title planning and also the authorization to issue those leases. The Act is really dealing with, one, the under self-determination and the Bureau. And if you talk to a Bureau employee, they constantly tell you that they're here to work themselves out of a job, and they are working for Navajo for that purpose. But that has been, you know, some people have retired and still saying that since they've been working for the Bureau. I guess at this point, the opportunity through the Act to adopt a grazing regulation and qualify, issue permits ourselves, and also issue permits that have been dormant for years. I'll give you also another issue that the Grazing Act is trying to work forward is the NPL area, Navajo Petition Lands, that have canceled permits for over 40 years now that have not been reissued. And also in Utah area, we have McCracken Mesa that has, there was no permits issued, and people are living, going on with their lives, but they don't have essentially any authorization by the government. They are doing that, or they are raising livestock and using grazing properties. So again, in terms of what it's trying to do is, one, give autonomy to the Navajo Nation, and also house the permitting process. I that's an interesting question, and I'm for personal wealth. And a lot of Navajo people, when you look at it, they say they're not poor, they're wealthy. And one of the things they mention is livestock, or they have a grazing permit. But in the Western world, that's not thinkable. Is this a permit? So again, that's the big challenge, because you have all elderly folks feel that you know, that is a ownership. But the Act does not, it does sort of push away from the fact that it's never been a deed, it's never been a form of ownership. It's always been a permit. But somewhere along the line, as I mentioned earlier when we started, is our forefathers or some of leadership, and it's not a very good thing to be advocating, but first you got to start and say, it's a permit, and how can you advance that permit for the best use? Well, the charge responsibility is managing of grazing land. If you take it out of grazing, then I think that Mike has clarified what what he's doing, and the advantages and progressiveness that they're thinking, it is going to help. Going back to the Act itself, there is a clarification, the clarification that we that we're looking to the future. And first you have to qualify the area. In under Western terms, you have to assemble control. Right now, we have a lot of open range. There's no control. And control is usually in the Western, and I hate to utilize that, but if you want financing to come on Navajo or any kind of leveraging, it has to be a form of ownership. The ownership could be under fencing through a permit, control. And it's quasi-ownership, but it's under control, and that's the attempt that we are trying to do at this point, even though one may say the federal laws currently, they exist, we just need to enforce them. However, it's been there for 50 years, and we have our problems. I think we need to try to address this differently, and that's the other attempt that we have on the table.
Okay. Now, having said that, we've covered pretty much the history, where we're going, what are the driving forces behind this addressing land on the Navajo Nation. Of course, there's a lot more detailed information that we can really get into. But let's just talk in general terms. Let's say we look 10 years down the road. If everything goes as you plan or as you hope that this whole act and all the land usage that you're talking about, Mr. Halona, what do you see? How do you see the Navajo Nation set up 10, 15, 20 years from now?
I see the Navajo Nation still as God's country, and I think what we'll see is a more of a systematic system and be able to get things done faster and quicker because of the tools that, and the processes and the laws and the regulations that we are putting into place right now. It'd be you know where the residential sites have been developed. You can look on a map and pull up information and know where all your water lines are on the nation, where every road is, where every utility is. You know where every home site lease is. You know every portion of the res and every section and every township and how many leases are in there, and because we've got them all recorded in the Navajo Land Title Data System that we designed for us, and now everybody in Indian Country wants to be able to use our system because of what it can do for us that are dealing in land management situations. I see in the future where a family can be able to have mortgage their home quicker and faster. You have more open lending on Navajo as a result, and so you have families that are proud to have ownership, and they have a title to their home that has equity on it, has value on it. And I see in 20 years that the home site lease will have a value. It could be worth $10,000. It could be worth $15,000, because in real estate, it's the people that put value on it. You know, we can put a value on it and have value. And also is if we are able to get control of the land uses and how the government sees and how what we're doing is that. You know, I see in 20 years that the tribal members, all of our people, own the land on where they have their leases at, where their home site leases. Not only do they own the home on it, but they actually have a deed to that 1 acre. I truly see it there because there is a mechanism in place for that to happen. It's just that
we're working toward
so we can make it happen.
Yeah, Mr. Watchman.
Yes.
Same question.
Can you move the question after the same question there?
Yeah.
I think the in 10 years, if this is passed, the our act is passed, then we have a range improvement act. The ambition side it's almost the same line as Mr. Alona mentioned. The going back to an individual, if you have a permit, and the ambition side of 10 years, that would be fully, I guess it would be issued in Navajo, from the Navajo Nation. Also, the advantage is that the Navajo Nation, by that issuing, will allow that too, if there is ownership, there's a number of other things to get ownership of a grazing permit. Or first, they got to assemble control. But ambitiously thinking, in 10 years, we hope to promote that you can leverage that particular permit. It's ironic that you can get a lease on federal lands, like, say, a forest permit, and you can go down to the bank and you can borrow money against it for improvements. But you can't do that on federal lands that happen to be in Indian country. So that's something that needs to be done away with, where if you're asking a Navajo person to take that responsibly on to manage land, somewhere along the line, it has to have appreciation. You know, the value, somewhere has to be a measurement. A value needs to go up in that particular community or that particular ranch or designated area. That's an ambitious side. But there's a transition period we have with our act that's looking at changing the FTE, changing a grazing official to a full-time employee, also looking at qualifying permits, reissuing permits, and two, the best plan, business plan through a conservation initiative. Also, that process, we're thinking it would take around 5 years, and there's a renewal process at another 5 years. So in 10 years, we hope to have begun the second layer of a reissue of permits by monitoring how are they doing in terms of what they stated in terms of the responsibility. There has been no responsibility at this point that other than saying here you have a permit, Navajo person, the responsibility somewhere is lost, and we want to encourage our Navajo people to, they are currently doing a lot of work for maintaining lands, but also it's never been mapped out, never been explained, it's been issued a permit. So again, it's more one-on-one is the thought within the next 5 to 7 years, at 10 years, have a basis to take another leap. Hopefully it would be leveraging and there would be true independent wealth, because as Mike had mentioned, the value might be bankable at that time, as it has been in the working for several years on home site leases and homes.
Okay. We have a caller on the phone. Caller, you are live with us. Do you have a question? Please identify who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes, you're on air.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is Ed DeSanti out of Wonderlock, Arizona. Real quick question to Leo and Mike. You know, Mike and Leo, you are well aware of our current tribal leadership. How do you expect to sell something so good to the Navajo people if the Navajo people have lost trust in their own government? I mean, you guys have probably worked so hard. You and a lot of other tribal employees have worked so hard, diligently, to get something going on behalf of the people. Yet, all we read about in the paper is corruption, conspiracy, you name it. So how do you think this act will be good for the people away from your tribal government? Thank you.
Mr. Halona.
I was hoping Mr. Watchman would answer that first. Mr. Bresenti, great question, and I think it starts with you, it starts with me, and it starts with every individual in here, and on the cyberspace, and we start thinking about, okay, what is it that we do, because we are the people. In essence, we are the government. And I think is the more that we as people want to rebuild our government, the integrity, the worthiness that puts on leadership. If we keep that bar high and demand that bar to be high, you know, people such as yourself and other leaders that are out there will share that vision, and those leaders will step up in time, and they will take this information, they understand it, they see the need in it, and I do believe there is a bright future for our nation.
Mr. Watchman.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate the comment or the question. Yes, I have been asked, as I mentioned, if you're listening earlier, that we have been in about 40 different chapter communities. And if you know those chapter communities, they ask any and every question. They have brought that up several times. And the answer that we have been given is that this document that we are pushing forward did come from the public. And they asked to develop a document to bring forward dealing with grazing issues and what they felt is it might help them in their back home issue. I really can't answer the question about changing people's minds and what they view, but I do feel that there is a time for change and there's an opportunity given now, and I hope that we can convince not only our Navajo people but leadership to make a step. And that's the only thing I can convey in reference to what we've been advocating. And have you ever been to our hearing or presentation? It's wide range of questions are asked, and we try to give the best answer possible.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. We have about 15 minutes left here to talk about this. And callers, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez. And the telephone number here, the telephone lines are open. We've got another caller who is on the phone, and I will bring you on as soon as I get done with my little commercial here.
And you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by Cal Nez.
Yep, this is Cal Nez. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and I appreciate all of you listeners and everybody who is on the phone with us right now, and also I am not sure what's going on with the caller here. Caller, can you hear me? Don't know what's going on. Please call back. I don't know how this button just collapsed on me here. But anyway, we are talking about the Navajo land, Navajo, how we're going to address the future and how we're going to make bring value to our home site. And we had a caller, Mr. Ed Vicente, called in and presented a wonderful question, is that these gentlemen are basically validating the work that you guys are making this thing happen for the future, and which is a wonderful thing. Now, let me also talk about another thing here, and that is when you talk about, of course, somebody has to start a plan. Somebody has to dream, or not dream, but actually develop the plan that needs to what they feel like is best for the Navajo Nation. Now, both of you have been involved. I've heard the summit I've heard about chapter meetings that you guys just brought up. How exactly at this point are you involving the general public? You have already talked about how that you have gone to the chapters. So how is the people being notified on all of these activities? Mr. Alona.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Mez, I guess I can take that question real quickly. One was when we were revising the home site lease policy that we started here in about 2009, 2010, we opened it up and we had agency meetings, we had work sessions with grazing officers, we had a work session with the resource committee at that time. We went to every chapter that would invite us, that would allow us to come in, and that had questions about it to provide their input. We put it on the internet. We blasted it out everywhere to get electronic comments, and we've actually got three boxes of comments that we narrowed down to be able to address those leases. And so there's a lot of public input that is put in, and the Land Summit is just another venue that we used as well. And so it's making, and then now it's been working with chapters, working with the club that are a community land use planning group within the chapters, helping them solidify their plans on what they want. Yes, there's 99 chapters that have a land use plan approved, but they have to be renewed in 5 years, and many of those are already up for 5-year renewal. And so those clubs are saying, we want to look at it from a different avenue. Now we understand. Now we've got more information to assist us with. And so they're taking ownership and planning their communities, and we're just providing them the technical advice and using their dreams, their vision of what their community is going to look like. And the only problem with the land use planning is 110 chapters is almost have the same plan. Each wants a Walmart. Each wants a gas station. Each wants, these different things. In reality, the population in that chapter won't hold some of these. And for some chapters that are planning economic development by location, they won't participate in good economic development just by location. And so that's some of the things that we're helping them understand that is that they're understanding the basics of business, such as you're a businessman. You look at feasibility. Would you build a business in this community based on these numbers? And where's your customer base going to come from? Well, it's sustained. And so helping them understand that. So there's a lot of education and information, things that they need to consider as well in developing their plans. So we help them along with their plans, but we like to keep it up to them so they take ownership. And you see the passion come out on what they see, what they want, and we just supply that. So that's how we know what they're looking at in the future and what they're seeing in the future and what their concerns are and what they'd like to have.
Yeah.
So we kind of foster that and help.
I appreciate that. Real quickly, Mr. Washington, we only got a few minutes left here.
Well, I probably could describe almost the same pattern which we followed with the Department of Agriculture on this act. But just to give assurance, I'm not sure how much input is really, how would you say this? Not everyone's going to have input, and there's always going to be a concern over it wasn't enough. And we've been working on this for a year and a half, and the most recent public meeting we had over 200 people. But since it has gone, the document that we have is in draft form. We gave everyone a copy, and it was more of a strategy session or a comment on the existing document. And the workshop concluded with some amendments that if it moves forward, they want for their community. So all of our presentations are sort of following that same pattern. People are getting involved, and they're concerned, or they have heard about it, but they want to see for themselves. When I say how much input is necessary, I don't have the right number because, again, it's legislation that we're asking our leaders to make a decision on, and hopefully they'll have enough information and people will support. Or if they do not support, they have a valid position. It's not misinformation. So that's the big challenge that we try to overcome each time. So that's what we're working on currently.
Yeah, I appreciate that again, too. And so you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and I'd like to thank Mr. Mike Colonna and Leo Watchman from the Navajo Nation for sharing information. I'm sure that there's many other, we can have this probably a one-week show just talking about the land. So I do appreciate it, and thank you. How can people get in touch with you? Can you please give a quick address and such?
Yes, you can reach me at my email address is m_Halona, which is spelled Halona, at frontiernet.net. And then my phone number at the office is 928-871-6401.
Department of Agriculture, we have a website, and the documents that I refer to are on our website. And the website address is www.agriculture.navajo@nsm.gov. So, and also our number at our office is 928-871-6605. And under that, the email is also received emails. You can make comments on that. Again, the document's lengthy, and when we push this forward, it's sometimes hard to get a hard copy, so it's best to review it online so you can go over it, and you might save some trees for everyone.
Thank you very much. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Mr. Mike Colonna and also Mr. Leo Watchman. I had Ms. Catherine Benally, Honorable Council Delegate Catherine Benally, on the phone, and somehow we got disconnected. So I have just texted her again to have her call back in, and I hope she does call in. And I wanted to ask her about some of the issues that have been surrounding the RDC, what they're doing in Phoenix and so forth, and just cover that. But I'm not sure where she's at. So in the meantime, while we're waiting for that call, I would like to bring on our other weekly guest, and I would like to introduce her. And this is Marley Shabala. Yate, Marley. How is it going?
Oh, yate, Cal. Can you hear me okay? Hello?
I can hear you great. Oh, I can hear you just fine.
All righty. Well, some background information on the Rangeland Management Act. It's actually the Grazing Act, and it is based on federal law for management of the reservation. And I'm saying that because I've received press releases from a group on the Navajo Reservation that is very much opposed to its passage, and they are quoting from the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. And this group is called the Nahoka Dene, and they say they strongly oppose the Navajo Rangeland Improvement Act as it takes the Navajo people further away from our identity and responsibilities as Diné. They say that they also understand the need to restore a balanced and harmonious relationship with the animals, land, and original Diné way of life as instructed by the Holy One, and that the Navajo Nation and federal government also support free, prior, and informed consent as outlined in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And that issue of free, prior, and informed consent is what has really gotten a lot of comments on your website, Cal, regarding the meeting that was held in downtown Phoenix at the Hyatt Regency by our by the Navajo Nation Council. And people have to understand that the Navajo-Iat-Ik Committee is basically the council. The membership of the Navajo-Iat-Ik Committee are the council delegates. And the it was actually resources and development chairperson Catherine Benally who requested to have that meeting down there, and there was no explanation of why it needed to be held in Phoenix. And this just further creates suspicion between the people and their government. And when you have the employees working very diligently on trying to get this information out and presenting drafts and talking about the benefits, that just seems to completely get shoved to the side because people are upset that their elected officials are meeting off the reservation on this issue, which is their homeland, and they're talking down there about, from what I gathered from what Mr. Helona and Mr. Watchman were saying, this is for the benefit of the Navajo people. This will help them in gaining some control over what's happening on their home site, at least. But at the same time, this group, the Nahoka Dene, also, and these are medicine people, they're also concerned that this law its foundation is based on the federal government. And then people once again begin to think about how the federal government has tried to control the land, and they've decided years ago when they created the Allotment Act, that was created because they wanted to make farmers out of us, because they thought, well, that's who we should be, is farmers. And there have been all these attempts by the federal government to create the Dene people and other people of the original lands here, original occupants, who were us, in their image. And it's created a lot of confusion, and that's what's happening right now. And this is not the first attempt that the council has tried to pass a grazing act or rangeland management act. It started well over 10 years ago, probably back in the late 1990s. And each time it came up before the council, they knew that it was going to be a political suicide, in that sense that they would not get reelected. And that's another issue, which is why the people need to be involved every step of the way. And if they want to get the support from the people, it was just really a bad decision, a bad idea, bad planning, I don't know what, you know, for them to go to Phoenix and have this meeting on this issue. Because there are, you know, positive and negative for this Land Management Act, especially now. And if you look at the presentation that was done by Mr. Watchman's staff, they even talk about climate change, which is something that the executive branch, which is headed by President Schelling, which is where the Department of Agriculture is located under the Division of Natural Resources, this is where they are beginning to address it, is within the Department of Agriculture, and I really applaud them for doing that, because the people really seriously need to look at what is happening with climate change, not just in our area on the reservation, but nationally and globally. It's an issue. And this Rangeland Management Act, also Nahoka Dene were the ones that also spoke out on behalf of the forest. And it seemed that our government was blaming the horses for the drought and what was happening with the rangeland. But it deals with climate change, and that goes back to the water. And yet, when there was discussion over the water, which was dealing with Navajo Generating Station, the water was given away by the government. So you have people that are out there saying, okay, you're saying you want to save the rangeland, but you give away our water. And then the people who stopped the water settlement also bring it up again. You know, they point again at what the government did in trying to hide certain portions of that water settlement which did give away a huge amount of water to these coal mine corporations. And these facing our people right now, especially the land, this is our homeland. It's not going to have any value. It's not going to have any leverage if there is no water. If there are, you can put in the water line, but if you don't have no water, what's the sense? You can't have business without water. And so you can have this great management plan, but if there is no water, what use is it? And you know that, Cal. I mean, you set up your business. I mean, every business uses water. I mean, you have to have a bathroom. You have to have certain things within your business. And if you're going to have a home, you definitely need water. Driving off reservation with huge piles of black laundry bags or those garbage bags in the back of their pickup truck, and they're all at the laundromat. And yet, there is no type of comprehensive planning by our government. And for them to go off reservation, they just pretty much shot themselves in the foot, or actually shot this Rangeland Management Act in the foot, in the head, wherever, you know. But there's a lot of concern about them going off the reservation to talk about the homeland. And I've been reading this, and I watched the council when the Grazing Act went before them, and they did not want to touch it. Not because it wasn't a good act, not because there was a need for some kind of management of the land, but because they knew that they would lose votes. And it was like, how, you know, these things take time. You need to start educating the people. Give them as much information as possible. We're in the social media age. And I'm so glad that Mr. Watchman and Mr. Halona came on, and I wish that Council Delegate Catherine Benally had also come on and explained to the people why something that is so important to the people, and they understand the value of land, they understand the value of livestock, that's in our prayers, that's in who we are. We are taught we are made from the four elements of life, that's water, air, fire, and Mother Earth, which is our homeland, the rangeland.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that's... you know, I think it's, you know, the concern right now is that from what I'm hearing from all over the place, social media, newspaper, and so forth, and that is that, you know, it is the transparency of information as to how that we need to engage the people, that they feel like that they're part of the process. They feel like that they are wanting to, that they have a voice. But I think maybe the letter of the laws or the acts is not exactly to our favor, but at least the spirit of the act or the law is headed in the right direction, because somewhere along the line, the Navajo Nation has got to get to a certain point where it enables, because I hear it all the time. I live off the reservation, just different people on Facebook, and they say, you know, I want to go home. But I don't feel like I'm a part of home because I don't have a place where I can buy, or I'd have to get a clearance here, there, and everywhere. So at least the dialogue, just like you said, I am very impressed with Mr. Halona and Mr. Watchman for coming on air and sharing this with us. But I think, you know, I am hopeful that, and that's why I want to get into the communication aspect of it. You know, the Navajo Nation has three media outlets, KTNN, KWRK, and the Navajo Times. You would think our people would be very well informed. Now, country music can only go so far, and also letters to the editors can only go so far, but somewhere along the line, the nation needs to be sharing information. And I appreciate what you're doing,
Marty. Now, do you think that by the opposition, I mean, in general, do you think that if the Navajo Nation was much more transparent, giving information out and just really saturating the community, do you think there would be a different position from the people?
I believe that. I truly believe that. Because the more that you have people informed and more educated, the more understanding they will have. It's like if you sit down with in your family, if you just walk in and say, okay, everybody's going to bed at 7 o'clock, and you know what your kids are going to say. They're going to be like, why? Well, you know, we used to go to bed at 8, you know, or 9 o'clock. You know, why are you? Because I said so. Because I said so. And you're going to have them angry. You're going to have them confused. And it's going to be a battle. Whereas if you came in and said, hey, I have this idea. Sit down. I'm going to talk to you about it. Instead of you going to bed at 9, what about going to bed at 8 and start talking about all the benefits and back and forth? Okay, well, you know, so what about 8:30 because I have, you know, I have to catch the bus. I have extra curriculum. And for the older ones, it might be, okay, you can stay up till 9. The younger ones, no, you can go to bed at 8. But you have a dialogue. You have discussion. And when everybody leaves the table, people are happy. They give a hug. Off they go. And that's what's happening with our government. It's arbitrary. This is what's good for you, and we know it because you elected us to make these decisions for you. And I've heard that in the council. I've heard that. And it's just unfair. It's disrespectful. We're all adults. Some of us are elders. And what what disturbs me about this Rangeland Management Act is it's how we have always looked at the federal government whenever it makes a law, blanket law for all of Indian Country. And we know as Diné how very different we are from our Hopi neighbors, our Zuni neighbors, our Lakota neighbors. We recognize that difference. And we respect it. And it's the same on Big Navajo. And what about Tohajale, Alamo, and Rema? Each of these groups should be able to come forward with their recommendations for their rangeland management. And there should be discussions with each of those areas. Our government, our own, Navajo Nation government is treating us like the federal government and saying, you know, this act is going to be for the entire reservation.
Very well said, Omarley. I appreciate it, and thank you so much for calling in. And we will see you next week. That was Marley Shabala. She has a weekly commentary, very, very good supporter. I appreciate it. I want to just give a shout out to my friend, Ed Bacenti. Thank you so much for all the work that you do for the people. And all my other friends out there, Sharon Singer Henderson, Joan Chissy, Mr. Henry Barber, and the list just goes on and on, including Marley Shabala and all the listeners out there. All you people do such a wonderful thing, and I appreciate for all the work that you guys do. Yeah, Lana. And we will see you next week.
And you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by Cal Nez.